Well, before I begin, let me remind you of the rules regarding forward-looking statements and non-GAAP financial measures. So let's begin. As you know, 2010 has been a strong year for Dow. Today, I'll cover highlights of our performance and how we see this momentum continuing into 2011. I will also provide an update regarding our strategy and how Dow has the right formula in place to drive long-term shareholder value and higher earnings growth. And finally, I will share with you our outlook and priorities for the near term. Our 2010 focus has been on execution and putting our strategy into action. In the last 12 months, we have achieved or exceeded our goals on all three fronts: strategic, operational, and financial. Strategically, we have exceeded our revenue growth goal, having delivered 28% year-to-date. We created new partnerships, evidenced by our new chlor-alkali joint venture with Mitsui, which will strengthen our performance in market-driven businesses at a low cost and with less capital outlays. We have outperformed our gross synergy target of $500 million by nearly reaching $1 billion mark at the end of the third quarter. And we are rapidly accelerating toward our 2012 goal of $2 billion in gross synergies. Operationally, we surpassed $2 billion in cost savings related to our restructuring programs and Roman Haas synergies, well ahead of schedule. And financially, we've exceeded our goal to divest $5 billion in non-strategic assets in less than 2 years. And we've reduced our net debt to total capital to 44% as of the end of the third quarter. Dow's earnings growth was demonstrated during the first half of this year, and even more so in the third quarter, as we continue to reduce our cost structure, deliver our synergy target, strengthen our balance sheet, and transform the portfolio. Our success can be seen in the numbers. In the first quarter of 2009, our annualized EBITDA run rate was $3.8 billion. In the third quarter of 2010, we more than doubled that performance, achieving $8 billion on a run rate basis. Going forward, we see this continuing, as EBITDA margins have improved by nearly 250 basis points and are above pre-recession levels, despite the fact that volumes have not returned to those levels in many of our businesses. 1 year ago, we shared our near-term revenue growth and normalized EBITDA margin targets. As you can see here on the revenue front, we are significantly above the trend line of the targets we shared at that time. And we are confident that we will achieve our 10% revenue growth moving forward. Now that we are a year removed from when we established these targets, I'd like to provide some updates based on where we see the industry dynamics. For electronic and specialty materials, we've now exceeded 30% margins for 5 consecutive quarters. And we anticipate performance will continue above the normalized range in the near term as growth remains strong in consumer electronics, solar, personal care, and water. Recovering the construction market in the developed world is taking longer than most anticipated. We therefore expect coatings and infrastructure margins will remain below the normalized range until conditions return to pre-recession levels. EBITDA margins in our ag segment are expected to remain below normalized levels in the near term as we continue to invest for growth in this segment. But we expect these will expand as we continue to monetize our innovation pipeline. On the other hand, performance systems and performance product segments are very close to what we committed a year ago. And now turning to plastics, we're well above range, benefiting from industry operating rates that are higher than expected, structural changes within the industry that benefit our franchise, and actions we have taken to shut down uncompetitive assets. And finally, in basic chemicals, we expect to deliver above our normalized targets as equity earnings will generate an increasing higher share of EBITDA. This is a direct result of our joint venture and value-added strategy in basic chemicals. Moving forward, there are three pillars that will drive growth: our geographic presence, our innovation pipeline, in our integrated business portfolio. Dow's growing geographic presence provides us with a stronger position to capitalize on emerging market opportunities. Our percent of revenues and assets coming from emerging markets is rapidly increasing. In fact, in the third quarter, Dow's revenue from emerging geographies surpassed the $4 billion mark for the first time in our history. And we continue to move at a rapid pace, demonstrated by these recent announcements. We have successfully started up our specialty polyethylene plant in Thailand. Our electronic materials business is building a new manufacturing site in eastern China. Our coatings business has broken ground in a new plant in Vietnam. And our water business has landed a major desalination project in Israel. It will be one of the three largest saltwater RO installations in the world. We also continue to make progress on our mega projects in the Middle East and Asia that will further expand our presence and growth in the emerging geographies. I'd now like to turn to our next pillar of growth, our innovation pipeline. We have more than 500 projects in our innovation playbook, all of which are strategically aligned with the four global megatrends: health and nutrition, energy, consumerism, and infrastructure and transportation. Our R&D engine today has a potential value of $30 billion on a non-risk-adjusted NPV basis, and this will continue to grow as we invest in our advanced materials portfolio, performance products, and ag businesses. When you look at it from a stage gate perspective, you can see that while we have no shortage of new projects at an early stage in our pipeline, equally compelling is how much of our pipeline is at an advanced stage in near commercialization. As you can see here, about 50% of our risk-adjusted NPV is in the implementation phase. As a proof point, the announcements you see listed on this slide are just a few of the many projects we're commercializing just recently. Proof of progress against our innovation agenda can also be seen in our growth synergies from the Rohm and Haas acquisition, which will produce $2 billion in new revenue by the end of 2012 on a run rate basis. These synergies are focused on new commercial activities, such as cross-selling to increase our share of existing customers, leveraging our new product portfolio, and creating new and innovative solutions for customers. There are many examples I could cite to illustrate how we are delivering, but perhaps the most telling fact is in the results. We surpassed our full year 2010 goal in the first quarter and are now approaching the $1 billion mark. On slide 11, you can see the key drivers that will deliver in the region of $10 billion of EBITDA in the near term. We've already discussed the role innovation and growth will play in expanding our EBITDA. As for volume, we are projecting a return to pre-recession levels in many of our businesses by 2011 and the rest by 2012. We are also expected to continue to benefit from higher equity earnings. For example, Dow Corning's equity earnings have grown at nearly 20% per year since 2004. This growth is expected to continue as they bring new silicone capacity online in China. In fact, this month, Dow Corning and its partner announced the largest integrated silicone manufacturing site in China. And Dow Corning's Hemlock Semiconductor JV will increase capacity by tenfold between 2005 and 2015. In addition, our Equate joint venture now benefits from recent capacity additions, which nearly doubled production capabilities. These are just two examples of how our joint ventures are expected to continue to deliver earnings growth. We are already well on our way to achieving the $10 billion near-term target, generating over $8 billion of EBITDA in the third quarter on a run rate basis. As we continue to implement the growth platforms in our new portfolio, we will reach EBITDA margin levels approaching 20%. Equally as important, we have detailed bottom-up EPS and EBITDA targets in place by business. Our recently announced business structure and leadership changes are squarely aligned with these goals. Now turning to our outlook and priorities. On the whole, we see positive signs of a sustained global economic recovery. Yes, the economy still faces headwinds such as high unemployment in the U.S., government debt and deficit issues, coupled with a depressed construction sector, which is curbing a robust recovery. However, businesses are sitting on record levels of cash, providing the liquidity to hire, invest, and grow businesses. In addition, most indicators show that developed countries have reached bottom in key economic factors such as job losses, personal debt levels, and bank stability. And while growth in emerging geographies is slowing a little, they still remain at high growth rates. This combination is a basis for our view that 2011 will be a year of further stabilization, followed by an environment of stronger growth in 2012. On that note, let me cover our macroeconomic assumptions for 2011. GDP growth will stabilize in 2010. We expect modest gains in 2011 and further growth in 2012 as we move beyond in the recovery. Emerging geographies will outpace the developed world, led by China, Brazil, and India, with high single-digit growth rates expected. From a hydrocarbons perspective, we see crude in the $80 to $85 range with upward pressure, and natural gas in the $4 to $4.50 range with downward pressure. This favorable oil-to-natural gas ratio will continue to improve the competitiveness of our U.S. cost position and will be a nice tailwind as our earnings growth continues to accelerate. Looking at our near-term assumptions for Dow, we expect moderate fluctuation in ethylene margins over the next several quarters. However, we will continue to maximize our returns as we have demonstrated in the past. We will continue to maintain our facilities and fund our R&D innovation pipeline. And interest expense will continue to decline as we pay down additional debt. Related to that, we just recently took opportunist action in the market, raising $2.5 billion of cash to pre-fund existing debt. This very successful bond issuance achieved the lowest interest rate in our history. And finally, from a tax perspective, with higher earnings, we expect our effective tax rate to increase from the 15 to 20% range we shared with you last year to an 18 to 23% range going forward. An important element of our strategy is aimed at reducing the earnings volatility of our portfolio. We have taken concerted action to change our portfolio to accomplish this goal. We have added high margin and more predictable businesses while shedding more volatile and non-strategic assets. These actions over the last several years have reduced the volatility of our portfolio by approximately one-third. The result is a more profitable and less volatile enterprise. Now turning to cash flow. We expect to generate approximately $35 billion in cash from operations over the next 5 years. You can clearly see our track record coming out of previous recessionary periods. The fact is, we doubled EBITDA exiting the last two economic recoveries, and we're already well on our way to doing it again. Many of you have asked, how will we prioritize the use of this cash? Our first priority remains to continue to pay down debt. That is followed by shareholder remuneration, which remains a key priority. We have paid a regular quarterly cash dividend for 396 consecutive quarters. Going forward, we will continue to implement our dividend policy and increasingly reward our shareholders as we continue to grow earnings. We'll do all of this while continuing to fund growth. And finally, we will add small, strategic, bolt-on acquisitions, primarily in advanced materials and ag sciences. Here you see the return on capital and return on equity targets we established and shared with you last year. We will make even further progress against these goals, gaining speed as our EBITDA continues to increase, and we will deliver against our EPS growth targets. Therefore, you should expect to see higher than average ROC and ROE over the next couple of years. Let me close by where we started. We have achieved a great deal over the last year, and there is more to come over the next couple of years. Operationally, we have sustained our cost synergies with a continued focus on productivity. Capital expenditures will rise to $2.4 billion in 2011, with investments directed at our performance businesses. Financially, we aim to generate $8 billion in cash flow from operations in the next 2 years, and we're already well on our way, having reached an annualized EBITDA run rate of $8 billion exiting the third quarter. We expect that this cash generation will allow us to drive down our net debt to total capital ratio to less than 40% by the end of 2012. On that note, I should add that while we are currently tracking ahead of our plan, you should expect us at the end of the year close to our 45% target as we look at opportunities to make voluntary contributions to our pension plan in the range of $350 million in each of the next two quarters. And finally, from a strategic perspective, we will finalize the investment decision for our potential joint venture with Saudi Aramco, which will strengthen our downstream performance and specialty plastic businesses in key emerging geographic regions. We will continue to make progress toward achieving our long-term ROC, ROE, and EPS growth targets. We will continue to improve our capital structure and will be opportunistic in the market, as we demonstrated with our recent debt issuance, to take advantage of the current low interest rate environment. And we will maintain our investment grade credit rating. In summary, we are in execution mode. We have the portfolio, we have the pipeline, and we have the geographic presence to make it happen. Thank you for your interest. At this time, I'm happy to take questions.
You know, Bill, you have talked about this natural gas advantage lasting for a while. What do you think could go wrong with that scenario that U.S. advantage begins to diminish? Is there any situation you can think of?
The only thing that I could think of is if some environmental issues came from, you know, the shale gas discovery, you know, in terms of new drilling capabilities. If something like that came out of the woodwork or something, that could derail a little bit. But other than that, given the new capabilities and given the significant gas reserves, and we see gas and liquids being advantaged in the U.S. for a long time. Perhaps from an environmental or something area could derail that a little bit.
And just secondly, on propylene,
yeah,
you know, you're short propylene. Propylene has been going up, but now you have a propylene PDH unit starting up. Can you just discuss your propylene balance and what could you do with your polypropylene assets?
You're right. We are a net buyer of propylene. In the past, we purchased about 45% of our propylene needs. The new contract we have with Petro Logistics will close that gap by about 20%. So we'll still be a net buyer outside of that, of somewhere in the neighborhood of around 25% on propylene, and we're continuing to look at avenues there to continue to close that gap more. In terms of the polypropylene, I think your question is, would we consider selling those assets? I think the question was, and yes. You know, we're currently evaluating that and looking at that, and that's a possibility. We often get the questions, to go on to that a little bit more, we often get the question, what are we going to do with our basic plastic assets? If I don't ask this, somebody here in the room will ask it. And to that point, we're continuing to evaluate all of our options there. As you can imagine, we have multiple options on the table. We're currently evaluating one, obviously has to do with the arbitration that's taking place. Another, as I highlighted in my talk about, we have ongoing engineering work on a major complex with Saudi Aramco that the KDAO assets could, you know, be linked to that deal. But also, we're also evaluating whether or not we divest parts of our basic plastics business. We feel that would be very doable. There would be a great amount of interest in that, and we're currently evaluating that. So to PJ, to your comment there, If we did, in fact, do that and sold part of our basic plastics assets, we would tend to focus on divesting more of our commodity-type basic plastics, which polypropylene would be an example of that. And you'll hear more to come on all of those options in 2011.
On the CapEx, going from $2 billion in 2010 to $2.4 billion in 2011, how do you think about that increase? I mean, I'm looking at depreciations about low $3 billion, $3.2 or so. So even still, it's going to be lower than depreciation. But can you just comment on that increase, you know, about to 2.4? Why not more? Why not less? And how that, you know, stacks up against maintenance CapEx?
Actually, that's a bigger increase than it might look on the surface, because our goal this year was $2 billion, as you may recall, which 1.6 was excluding VIEs, variable interest entities, which under new accounting rules have to be consolidated. $400 million was from those, so it was $2 billion in total. I believe that we'll come in around 1.7 to 1.8 this year. We're going to come in $200 to $300 million under our CapEx budget this year. So really the increase is more going from about a 1.7 to 1.8 up to about a 2.4. So the actual increase is actually pretty significant. The second thing I'd like to highlight is two-thirds of that, or 65% of that CapEx spending, is specifically focused on our performance businesses. And so we are very much targeting growth in our performance businesses, so it's very much focused on those. So, and our depreciation amortization, it's somewhere, I think, about $2.933 billion, so a little bit lower than your number, but pretty close.
Oh, yeah, good morning. Can you talk a little bit about TiO2 and new technologies you guys are working on for that?
Right. TiO2, as you know, we don't produce that. Some other companies do produce that. But we're in the process. That is in short supply, as you know, from a capacity constraint standpoint. And we've been working on some technology that can replace or reduce the amount of TiO2 required, and we're in the first generation, and that's very promising. We've got it in paints today. We're working with some of our different customers. We're also working on Gen 2, which actually even decreases more the amount of TiO2 that's required, and those are all going good. At this point, we're still in the discovery phase, and working close with our customers, so we aren't disclosing a lot of information other than to say it's pretty promising.
Just give us an update on your heat map since the third quarter conference call. Is any material change there, or is it roughly flat?
Sorry, I don't know what you're referring to. In terms, the macroeconomic outlook in terms of?
Yes, by division, like you lay it out in your slideshows.
Yeah, in terms of each of our different segments, how
right.
They're doing, and are you interested in how they're doing fourth quarter versus third, or sorry?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, if you look across our portfolio, let me make a couple comments. We don't give guidance, as everyone knows in this room, but let me give you a couple things of what we're seeing, and then I'll talk a little bit about each of our segments at a high level. First of all, from a fourth quarter standpoint, I can tell you that October sales were very similar to what we saw in September, in August, September, and November is the same. So the message there is we're not seeing a drop-off in sales or demand in the fourth quarter. It's staying very stable. We can see out about 30 to 45 days in our open orders, and so we can see pretty much through December now. And at this point, we're not seeing a drop-off in December. Historically, we used to see a fairly substantial drop-off the last 2 weeks around the holiday season, particularly automobile industries and others would ramp down and shut their facilities down. We're not seeing that ramp down, very similar to what we saw last year. Last year, we didn't see it either. But historically, before that, we used to see that. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why all that is, but I have my own personal opinions. I think that's partially due to two reasons. I think the way the holiday season falls this year both Christmas and New Year's are all going to fall within the same week. It's, you know, just the way they fall. I think Christmas is on a Saturday. And so it's not like crossing over 2 weeks. So probably from a standpoint of perhaps shutdowns or vacations, that actually might limit that a little bit. The second thing is we still believe that inventory in the chain is pretty low. And so companies cannot decrease production substantially because they don't have the inventory to actually reduce. So overall, it's a long answer, but overall, fourth quarter versus third quarter, we see demands, if you will, very similar to third quarter. We're not seeing a drop off. So we think that's pretty good. Having said that we do see the normal seasonal decline in our seasonal businesses. So construction is down, automotive is down a little bit, fourth versus third. Electronics will be down a little bit, fourth versus third. But it's the normal seasonality. It's not the underlying demand. So we're not concerned about a double-dip recession. We're still in the camp that we will see not robust growth, but we are still seeing steady, slow demand recovery. And I can tell you we're seeing that continue into the fourth quarter, and we're not seeing any alarming signs at this point. If I go now, eat through real quickly through each of our segments, electronic and specialty materials, as I mentioned to you, electronics is going gangbusters. As you know, we've had EBITDA margins in excess of 30% for the last five consecutive quarters. We will see a little bit of a seasonal decline in that in demand there, 4 or 5% sort of range, but not substantial, just a normal seasonal decline. Typically, electronics is very strong in the third quarter. They build for the holiday season, and then you see a little bit of a tail off. I get questions periodically, how long can that continue? What's going on in electronics? You know, that's been so robust. You know, I don't know. We're not seeing a decline at this point, but will we see some drop-off in demand sometime next year? Perhaps. At this point, we haven't seen that drop-off. I know there is some concern in the marketplace. Is there too much inventory in the channel? We haven't seen it decline yet. I'm not saying we won't see one, but so far we haven't seen it. If you move to coatings and infrastructure is largely impacted by the construction market. That's where our building and construction business is at. So you will see a seasonal decline in the fourth quarter versus the third quarter in that segment. Moving to performance systems, you will see a little bit of decline sequentially in performance systems, primarily due to the fact that that's where our automotive business is at, and that's where our wire and cable business is at. And so both of those will see a slight seasonal decline in those two end markets. Performance products, probably fairly similar to third quarter. I'm trying to think what jumps out at me there. Epoxy might be down a little bit versus prior quarter, again, due to seasonal decline. Epoxy goes into electronics. And so probably a little seasonal decline there. Base plastics will remain strong and perhaps down slightly from where it was third quarter, but quite strong. And basic chemicals is doing quite well. Caustic just recently, I think, announced their seventh price increase for the year. That's a quick run through the segments. But overall, I would say, overall demand is very solid, similar to third quarter levels, with just the seasonality we see in some of our normal end markets. Hope that helped a little bit, give you a perspective of what we're seeing. Any other questions?
Just on the credit side, what ratings longer term are you targeting, given that your ratings have been stabilized by the rating agencies post your debt pay down and asset sales?
Obviously, we'd like our credit rating to continue to increase, but I can't drive that. But I can drive the metrics that'll help drive that. Obviously, we haven't come up with a specific target. Other than we do believe, if you look at the targets that we set out there, that we're going to reduce our net debt to total cap at a minimum to 40% by the end of 2012, and actually our EBITDA net debt to EBITDA will be below 2 by the end of 2012. Those are the kind of metrics, if you will, that I think, can't speak on behalf of the rating agencies, but I think would justify, or they would certainly consider. The key metric they look at now is EBITDA, and it's the 2.0 ratio that they look at. So we do believe we're on track to move in that direction. So, And that, by the way, those numbers that I shared with you, going getting to a 40% net debt to total cap and below it a 2 ratio on EBITDA, that doesn't include anything on arbitration. That doesn't include anything, whatever we might do on the base plastics. That's, we can get there just through normal operating earnings. And so, obviously, anything that we do on those other fronts will change that number down, you know, very, very quickly. So overall, I think we're pretty, I think from an outlook standpoint, and liquidity is not an issue. We have a lot of cash, and we're not drawing it in at all in our revolver. Actually, at year end, we'll have a substantial cash balance because the debt we issued, the debt issuance, we issued $2.5 billion of debt. So we will be carrying a significant cash balance at year end. The reason we're doing that is we have a $1.8 billion of cash debt maturing in the first half of the year, so that will be used to pay off that debt. And we issued 5-year and 15-year bonds. And so, but year end we'll carry that cash. But don't be misled that we're going to use that in acquisition. That will be used specifically to pay off the $1.8 billion of debt that's maturing in the first half of the year. So year end we have a significant cash balance of excess of $5 billion. Any other questions? One more.
On the plastic side, we have still not seen the impact of so much publicized capacity. What are your thoughts? What are the reasons for that?
I think actually a couple reasons, which are consistent with what we shared about a year ago, is the capacity, a couple things. Most of the capacity has come online, with the exception, I believe Exxon Mobil's got some capacity coming on. I think there's a little bit of capacity coming on in China. Other than that, most of the capacity has come online. However, it's not running at capacity. It's been ramping up. It's been ramping up slowly. So that's part of it. You can't just run these facilities at capacity day one. You got to work out the bugs. They're large facilities. Second of all, I believe demand has been stronger than some people anticipated. Polyethylene demand historically grows about 1.5 times GDP. So that's in the four. You use PJ's assumptions there of, you know, 2.73, which, by the way, we're in the same camp as his numbers are. You're looking at polyethylene demands between 4.5% and 5%, and that's pretty consistent, as has been growing at that for a long time. I know it's a little bit more optimistic, those numbers, than CMAI's data, but that's what we're seeing. And so that kind of capacity, that kind of demand increase can absorb a lot of capacity coming on stream. So you're always going to have unplanned outages. Matter of fact, there were 7 crackers down earlier this quarter. All but 2 are back up, but you're always going to have that in this industry, and so that always, you know, that again, the idea that these plants are all going to run at capacity is a misnomer. That's not going to happen. There's always going to be ups and downs in capacity. I'm not sure that everyone always factors that in. They feel that these plants are going to run at capacity. So, all in all, we believe that we're still pretty bullish on the plastics going forward. And as PJ mentioned in his comments, we see the natural gas scenario staying advantaged in the U.S. And as he pointed out, we agree with that also, that it's the second lowest cost after in the Middle East. And we see that advantage staying for quite a long time. And we think the advantage feedstock will be ethane for a number of years, because our view is oil and naphtha are more linked, and those will go up going forward, which gives you pricing power. But yet the folks that can use ethane as a feed and gas as a feed will be advantaged. And Dow's clearly in that arena globally. Our crackers can use about 55% ethane. In North America, we can use about 70% ethane feed. We have that flexibility, and actually in Canada and Latin America, we can go 100% ethane. And so there's no one else in that same category as us with that amount of flexibility. So at that point, I need to cut it off. I appreciate all of your interest. Thank you.